What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Inside the Park. I'm Steve Gelbs. We are a day later this week, Wednesday, August 31st, but I promise you this will be worth the wait because making his first appearance on the Inside the Park podcast, the newest member of the New York Mets beat, James Wags Wagner of the New York Times. We are going to talk wild card race. We'll talk some Nats perspective on things because he was a Nationals beat writer before he was a Mets beat writer before he jumped ship. And I think that there are some similarities that we can get into last year and this year. Also talking Cespedes, Reyes, Terry Collins. It's all coming up in just a second. But first, to subscribe to this show, just search for the SNY.TV Mets podcast channel. You can find us on the iPhone podcast app on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, and Audio Boom. The Mets podcast channel not only has this show, but also the Mets blog Q&A cast with Matt Cerrone, the Mostly Mets podcast with Rob Brender and Toby Hyde, as well as an assortment of audio interviews from Mets players to the manager Terry Collins and GM Sandy Alderson. But with that, we officially welcome in James Wagner to the show. And he told me right before we came on that he brought his jokes. So the bar is set pretty high, my friend.
Yeah, I've been counting down the days for this appearance, so I've been saving kind of my best material jokes-wise. So.
Well, you did say to me when I asked you if you would be on this show, you said you wouldn't sleep the night before, so that's really the most critical question. How much shut-eye did you get last night?
Four cups of coffee shut-eye. So I'm so pumped, man. You have no idea. Hopefully people out there can feel it.
It's palpable. It's definitely palpable. But how long did you cover the Nationals before you came over here?
I think it was like 4.5 years. So from the middle of the 2012 season through the end of 15 seasons. So I saw, you know, two division titles, 2012 and 2014. And then I saw two subsequent flameouts in 13 and then 15 last year when the expectations were raised so much from the previous season. And then they flopped the following season. So I think in that short span, I've covered three different managers. So they've had a bunch of turnover and interesting situations over there.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the flameout in 2015. Let's talk about the one from last year. Do you sense any similarities between the Nationals last year and the Mets this year? Although the Mets are right there. We're not necessarily talking about a flameout, but the expectations being so high. And then just like last year when the Nationals experienced all these injuries, the Mets fighting through so much of that. From your perspective, are they two similar situations at all, or are the differences vast, I should say?
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing where, you know, obviously the Nationals in 2014 just won the division and lost the first round. They didn't reach the World Series. But given the talent on the team, given Bryce Harper's, Bryce Harper's kind of rise, the rest of the team, the talent, signing Scherzer, you know, everyone thought they would be the World Series contender, like the favorites to win the World Series, given everything they'd done and the talent they had. But obviously, they fell. I mean, they only won 83 games last year, didn't make the playoffs. And, you know, I think they only had their starting, eight position players in the lineup for two games last season. So it's kind of the same idea that, you know, the expectations were raised based on the previous season here with the Mets, and then they have just not been able to field a consistent and healthy team, all season. So, yeah, I mean, and the idea that the same with the Nets, that every time you thought they were about to get healthy, then they got hurt. You know, last year they had their starting eight position players in the lineup for the first time, two games, and Denard Span landed on the DL for his third time that season, and he made a big difference in that lineup too. So just everything that could go wrong went wrong, from the manager to the players to the decisions made, you know, roster-wise, and just, you know, now, I mean, in that sense, maybe it's not a perfect comparison, but I think the idea that, you know, something pops up every single day that is kind of holding back in a high-expectation team, is that seems very similar, yeah.
When you look at what happened last year, the manager, Matt Williams, was the one who took the fall for what happened. This season, Dusty Baker totally a new breath of fresh air from all I can gather talking to people on that side. You were there on a day in, day out basis. Just how much of a difference has the managerial switch made versus just the fact that they are much healthier this year and maybe are playing up to those expectations?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've ever met Dusty Baker, or if you guys out there listen have been around. He's been around baseball for, 20 some years. I was managed for 20 some years. This guy, knows what he's doing. And in that sense, like, he is a very bright, fun, easygoing personality, very lively. He's a big personality. Like, publicly, he gets along with his players, laughs with them. But if he's mad, behind closed doors, he'll kind of ream them out. So he's got that big, larger-than-life personality. I know people kind of knock on him as being, you know, a bad in-game manager, but I think he doesn't get enough credit for, you know, being a decent one there. But in that sense, he's different from Matt Williams. Matt Williams was an inexperienced manager. He hadn't done this before. This is his first time. You know, he had the range of possible kind of outcomes he had to deal with last year. A talented team with high expectations, falling down to the bottom with injuries, and you know, it's tough for a guy that had never done this before, never dealt with all those situations before as a leader and as a manager. And he had a different personality than Dusty Baker. So, you know, players have said this, you know, and it was very tangible, the difference, just, you know, how much more fun they were having, you know, under Dusty Baker right now.
And I think this is where the two teams, the Nationals last year and the Mets this year, kind of diverge when you talk about maybe not being a perfect comparison, whereas the Nationals last year had Matt Williams, and clearly once that situation started to devolve, he couldn't turn that ship around and right that ship. Terry Collins is doing, in my opinion at least, and you could have your own, but a remarkable job managing what he's been given and what you know, what punches have been thrown his way and the team's way. And I know that, you know, Mets fans in general, a lot of them like to get on Terry Collins, and I think there's a natural kind of just human instinct to something's going wrong, something's not going exactly right, well, who's to blame? But if you really take a step back and look at this, I mean, the opening day roster I just kind of put out in front of me from this year, Curtis Granderson led off. He has not been good this season, performed much lower than expectations. David Wright, done for the year. Yoenis Cespedes, for a month plus, has been hobbled and right now seems to be finding his form, but still has that quad to worry about. Lucas Duda, done for the year. Neil Walker, who knows at this point. Michael Conforto, AAA, as Drupal Cabrera, clearly compromised as well. Travis d'Arnaud, a bit disappointing. Juan Lagares, done. Matt Harvey, done, not to mention Steven Matz's uncertainty, Jacob deGrom dealing with whatever he's dealing with right now, and Zach Wheeler never coming back. And you mentioned all of that, and the Mets are 2.5 games out of a playoff spot right now. So for me, you know, Terry Collins has done a tremendous job this year. Is that something that you would agree with, especially seeing, again, how it can go when things start to get bad?
Yeah, I mean, I think, but I mean, two things. I mean, Terry Collins, I think, you know, my time around him, and other, the, you know, the 3-4 other managers I've been around on a daily basis, like, you know, I think he maybe doesn't get enough credit for the people skills. I think he handles that well, maybe handles the clubhouse well, personalities well. And I think that's a huge part of being a manager, maybe sometimes more so, you know, and advanced statistics, whatever, you can debate this, but it, versus the in-game stuff. Like, you know, I think maybe the way you handle players and personalities sometimes even has more value than, did you put the right reliever in the right situation? Did you pull the starter before you should have? I mean, over a long season, maybe does that add up versus, you know, what he does in the clubhouse? And the other thing I think, too, is that the competition in the National League might be weaker this year. I mean, last year, was it the Pirates and the Cubs won 98 and 97 games to win the wild card. I think this year it might only take, what, mid-80s maybe?
Probably,
high 80s to get a wild card spot. And that kind of hurt the Nationals last year. You know, they, you know, won 83 games. Sure, that wasn't very good. But if you have 83 games this year, maybe that still has you in contention until the last, you know, last week of the season.
So let's talk about that for a second. When you look at this wild card race right now, and the Mets, as we tape this podcast, are, you know, 2.5 games back again of the Cardinals. They're one game in front of the Marlins. Very close with the Pirates. As you look and kind of project out, especially given the injury situation that the Mets have, but how they've been playing through it and the schedule that they have in the month of September, what is your gut feel on how this thing ends up?
I don't know. I mean, I think they still make a serious run for it. I think the wild card obviously is a very legit possibility. It's kind of hard to say that they have any chances in the division race, just given the Nationals' like large lead. But I think the wild card offers a good opportunity because, I don't know, I mean, we saw the Giants recently, and I know they have a lot of top-end talent, but they seemed almost like kind of top-heavy. I'm not quite sure as a whole how the parts fit. The Pirates, I think, have a lot of talent and maybe really, you know, have had to deal with injuries and underperformance and all those things. I think they're so dangerous in terms of talent. The Cardinals looked better than I expected, so I think they'd probably still be a serious contender. But I think the Marlins have shown that their kind of starting pitching has kind of fallen off, so I think, you know, who knows what's going to happen to them. But ultimately it'd be down to the kind of those four teams in the mix for those two spots, I'd say.
And, you know, Wags, we talk about all of these injuries that the Mets are dealing with, and yet they're still winning right now. And for me, that comes down to two guys, really. And I know Asdrubal Cabrera has been incredibly hot, but for me, Yoenis Cespedes in the middle of that order, doing what he does and what he's capable of doing. And then Jose Reyes at the top of the order, who has been absolutely sensational since coming back off the DL. 11-6 the Mets are since his return. He's hitting .356, an on-base percentage over .400, five doubles, one triple, one home run, three stolen bases. Three stolen bases, by the way, in those 17 games. And before he signed with the Mets, I believe David Wright led the team with three stolen bases. I believe he led the team with three stolen bases at that point. So, you know, these are things that the Mets haven't had this season. And when you kind of look out and project forward and just you and I being around the team every day, you see what energy Reyes brings, not just on the field, but in the clubhouse. And I think he's starting to creep up to the point where he may be just as or a tier below as important to this lineup as Yoenis Cespedes has been.
Yeah, I think the way I see it is, like, you think of the lineup in terms of, like, dynamic ability or, like, abilities and who offers a different look or different dynamics or who can do more than one skill offensively in the lineup. You think about it. I mean, they have a lot of power hitters, guys that don't really hit for high average. I know Walker and Cabrera have hit a lot better over recently and their average has crept up, but you know, those guys are kind of like, you know, strikeout power hitters, you know, gap hitters. But I would say Reyes offers kind of more than one dynamic, you know, the kind of average ability, the speed ability. And I'd say even on top of that offensively, his arm, I think his throwing arm has been a huge asset, I think, defensively. I think on some games, some plays, maybe that would have extended innings if he hadn't had that kind of quick arm to get that throw to second base or first base. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put him as close to Cespedes, but I think of this last month or so, Joe Kings has been a very valuable piece of this team.
See, it took a little while. I was waiting for the A material, but there you go. It's kind of stealing from Mark Carrig, too.
Who?
Mark Craig? Is it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But you know, for me, the really interesting thing with Jose Reyes is what he also does behind the scenes with this clubhouse and how quickly this clubhouse and these players have seemed to not just take to him and enjoy him being around, but almost look to him as a leader. And, you know, I heard it from Kelly Johnson. I remember when the Mets had just signed Jose Reyes and he was going down to, you know, start his way back at the minor leagues. And Kelly Johnson said that the thing people don't truly understand about a guy like Jose Reyes is that he's one of those rare players similar to a Juan Uribe that can come into a clubhouse and provide such a jolt of energy, but also bring you know, the Latin players and the American players together a little bit. Not that there's such a vast divide, but when you have different cultures and a language barrier, sometimes you need that one guy that can have such energy and bring both sides together. And Kelly Johnson said Jose Reyes is that type of player. Now, even after he said that, I thought that he would have a little bit of a difficult time coming into the clubhouse and being that larger-than-life figure that could kind of ascend to that position in the clubhouse, but he's done it incredibly quickly. We heard Yoenis Cespedes the other night, the star of the team, reference Jose Reyes in a post-game press conference for the things that Reyes is saying. So to me, I don't know if it surprised you as much. It surprised me, but I think it's also been something that people don't see unless you're here on an everyday basis and has been somewhat invaluable to this team.
Yeah, I think Reyes has been a big part of that for all the reasons you mentioned. Not just that he's performing, and I think that kind of helps your stature in a clubhouse if you actually perform too. But also just like his personality, he almost seems like the kind of party starter in there too. Not that they weren't like kind of lively and fun anyway, but I think he's kind of way more. I mean, this guy's got tons of energy. I just see him every day laughing, goofing around, playing Latin music, you know, bouncing off the walls, you know, teasing teammates, joking around with them, smiling. You know, Cabrera kind of offers those same qualities, but maybe not so large in that way. I mean, Cabrera himself plays. I mean, Asdrubal plays music in there, laughs around, jokes with teammates. But I think Reyes even is taking that maybe to another level. So I think, I think it's just kind of who he is. And I think, he knows some of those guys in there. I think he, you know, whether he was, you know, he knew them in the minor leagues here with the Mets or obviously David Wright with the majors, you know, up here, or even Duda, I think he might have overlapped with him too. I think he's brought kind of a jolt, as cliche as it might sound, both on the field and in the clubhouse.
Wags, this is I'm looking at my rundown right now, and this is the part of the show where it just says say goodbye to Wags.
Okay.
So it's not my favorite part of the show, but they're telling me that has to happen. You had one solid joke in there that you brought Mark Kerrigan to. Do you want to leave us with anything? Did you have anything that you thought of, or are you just going to go off into the night?
I think, actually, I was thinking about that. I might save it and for the newspaper. So if you want to read my best material, it'll be in the New York Times or nytimes.com.
That's why he's a
God,
pro.
That sounded terrible.
That's why he's a pro. No, that's it. That's a plug. That's a professional plug. Wags, thanks a lot, buddy.
No problem, man.
Hey, if you're a Mets fan, be sure to check out Matthew Cerrone's Mets blog Q&A cast. Last week, Matt sat down with radio personality Sid Rosenberg about the state of the team and his thoughts on Doc Gooden. You can find that interview on the SNY.TV audio network located on the iPhone Podcasts app, or whatever app you use to listen to your podcasts. And if you want to just listen to all of our Mets audio content, then subscribe to the SNY.TV Mets podcast channel, also located on iTunes. We give our thanks again to James Wagner for joining us a little bit. And, you know, we kind of danced around the topic, the Cespedes-Reyes topic, who's the most important to this team and this lineup. And I think, like Wag said, it is pretty clear still that Cespedes is the engine that makes this lineup go, even though I do think Reyes is kind of creeping up towards that. But, you know, the elephant in the room here continues to be just how much longer Cespedes will be that guy for this team. Everyone's so focused on the here and now, and we're about to enter the September stretch. But will Cespedes be here next season? And I've been digging around a little bit on it. And, you know, I know this probably isn't comforting at all, or not necessarily what Mets fans want to hear, but I think at this point, nobody really knows exactly what Yoenis Cespedes is going to do. And there are really three potential outcomes here. First of all, he could very easily opt out of the contract. I think the Mets are prepared for Cespedes to opt out of the contract. I think it probably makes a lot of financial sense for Cespedes to opt out of the contract, considering the fact that he will be entering a very weak market and will clearly be the number one guy and should command a solid amount in terms of both years and salary. But if he does opt out, the feel I get is that that's probably it. I don't think you're going to see a scenario like last year where the Mets bring back Cespedes, unless that market, again, does not develop, which, given the outfield market this year, I'm not sure it will necessarily develop to where Cespedes exactly wants it to be. Maybe we're not talking 5-6 years, $150 million, but he's going to get paid. And I don't know if the Mets would bring him back if he does opt out of his contract. That being said, there's also a belief in the organization, a hope in the organization, that he very well could just play out these last 2 years. The fact that he loves this city, this team, that he's comfortable here, that's not something that people should overlook. I've spoken about it before. I've spoken about it on broadcasts before. It's a real thing just how comfortable Cespedes is in this environment. And don't discount that. And it's not like he's going to be making, you know, pennies for the next 2 years. He'd be making a lot of money. So there is a belief that he might just play it out because he knows if he opts out that his days as a New York Met are probably done. So that is a possibility. That's not something to be totally discounted. And then, you know, this might be the most realistic possibility, is that at some point here in the next month, maybe right after the season, Yoenis Cespedes' representation reaches out to the Mets and tries to see if they can tack on a year, maybe a second year, to the current contract. The Mets will not go, from everything I've been told, they will not go 3 more years. They may be willing to go an extra year, maybe an extra two. Again, a lot of it will depend on just what Cespedes' camp will want. And they've got some time, some room to work. There's been no communication, last I checked, between both camps, but the Mets do have until 5 days after the World Series, with which they need to be notified by Cespedes if he's opting out. So there is some time here, especially if the Mets don't make the playoffs. They'll have, you know, a good month to potentially look at their options. So, again, I know that probably doesn't clear anything up, but those are the three scenarios you're looking at. And, again, I just don't think anyone outside of maybe Cespedes, and I'm talking maybe Cespedes, he might not have even made this decision yet, I don't think anyone knows quite which way he is leaning. at this point, but it is going to be something that I'm sure we will revisit here in the next couple of months, because this will be the number one topic of discussion once the Mets offseason kicks in, given how valuable Yoenis Cespedes is to this team. Before we head out for the week, I also want to touch on one other thing, and I spoke about this on the broadcast the other night, but these are the things that to me are fascinating. If you watch the way Kelly Johnson has been playing lately, it's a different Kelly Johnson than we've seen in quite some time. Five home runs in his last 49 at-bats at the time of this podcast taping. Kelly Johnson only had four home runs in his first 203 at-bats this season. And that's not just a coincidence. That is not something that is just, hey, the guy's on a hot streak right now. Kelly Johnson has changed his approach at the plate, and he's changed his swing to be more like Daniel Murphy. Kelly Johnson went to the Mets coaches shortly after he came over to the Mets, came back to the Mets, and he basically said, listen, I saw what type of hitter Murphy turned himself into down the stretch last season. I saw what type of hitter he's become this year, and he did it later in his career. Why can't I do something like that later in my career? And so Kelly Johnson has been watching a lot of video of Daniel Murphy. He's moved up closer to the plate than he's been at any point in his career. He's trying to be much shorter to the ball, much more compact. And during batting practice, Johnson has totally changed the way that he approaches batting practice. In the past, he'd be looking to hit balls to the opposite way, hit balls up the middle. Now he's looking to go up there and hit some shots, hit some home runs. I was talking to Kevin Long the other day, and he said that Kelly Johnson used to never hit a home run in batting practice. And the last BP session that Kevin Long was telling me about, he thinks he would estimate he hit about 15 out of the park. So Kelly Johnson has changed the way he is as a hitter. And I think especially given his role on this team as a guy that will come off the bench in late inning situations, in important situations, it's not the worst approach in the world to go up there, not necessarily, as Kevin Long puts it, not necessarily looking to get a hit, but looking to do some damage. And Kelly Johnson has been doing a lot of damage for the Mets as of late. And that will do it for this week's edition of Inside the Park. Want to thank Wags, James Wagner. Ooh, what an addition to the show. What an addition to the beat. James Wagner joining us here today. We will be back with you, of course, in 2 weeks. We will be back on Tuesday in 2 weeks, and we will be right in the thick of the home stretch there. So, again, for James Wagner, I'm Steve Gelbs. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been Inside the Park with Steve Gelbs, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.